So today, I want to talk about 1 Corinthians 11. This is a passage concerning head coverings. It's traditionally interpreted as talking about head coverings. And I'm going to see what... I'm going to introduce all this, but a lot of people have tried to interpret this passage, but there are plenty of problems in all these interpretations. And I'm going to explore one particular interpretation that seems to fit all the evidence. So let's turn first to 1 Corinthians 11, and we'll have somebody read it.
Sorry, what?
1 Corinthians 11. Starting from verse 2.
Yeah, it's probably 16.
Now I commend you because you remember me in everything and maintain the traditions even as I delivered them to you. But what I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ. The head of a wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. Every man who prays or prophesies with his head covered dishonors his head. But every wife who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. It is the same as if her head were shaven. For if a wife will not cover her head, then she should cut her hair short. But since it is disgraceful for a wife to cut off her hair or shave her head, let her cover her head. For a man ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and the glory of God. But woman is the glory of God. For man is not made from woman, but woman from man. Neither was man created for woman, but woman for man. That is why a wife ought to have a symbol of authority on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman. For as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman. And all things are from God. Judge for yourselves. Is it proper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not nature itself teach you that if a man wears long hair, is it disgraceful for him? But if a woman has long hair, it is her glory. For her hair is given to her for covering. If anyone is inclined to be contentious, we have no such practice, nor do the churches of God.
All right, what translation was that?
ESV?
Well, that was a very bad translation.
Okay.
NIV also has weird things.
Yeah.
The best thing for you to do is toss out all your English Bibles and get a Greek one. Or maybe give away your English Bibles, but don't use them anymore. Get Greek only. All right, so... why? Why is that? Why did it have weird things in it? Well, you're beginning... Hi, Chuck. The beginning of it, your translation chose to translate wife instead of woman, but since there's no article on it, it's probably better to translate it as just woman in the first verse, verse 3. Another thing, too, verse 10, where it says... your version inserted symbol of authority. That is actually not there. I don't know why people put it, but it's an insertion, and it actually says that a woman should have authority over her head, meaning she should exercise authority on her head. So that is the straightforward, and I don't, people put that. Actually, there is a reason why. But let's talk about some of the more traditional interpretations of this passage. This is 1 Corinthians 11. My name is Joe.
I'm new, so I don't know.
Oh, you're new.
I'm also very old. I was worked and volunteered at this church 35 years ago.
Yeah, cool. What's your name?
I'm taught Bible study on women.
Yeah.
Bill Goff.
Bill Goff?
Yeah. G-O-F-F.
G-O-F-F. Okay, cool.
And you are?
I'm Joe.
Joe.
Yeah.
J-O-E.
J-O. It's short for Joanna, but
okay.
Yeah. Okay, so what are some of the traditional interpretations that people have heard about this passage? Does anyone throw anything out?
Oh, yeah. Women are subordinate to men and shouldn't exercise authority in the church.
Right, and they have to have a symbol of authority.
No women pastors in the Southern Baptist Convention.
Right.
Or even, women should put on a doily when they pray.
Yeah.
I mean, those are other...
Or Easter bonnets.
Or Easter bunnies? What did you say?
Bonnets.
Bonnets, right. Yeah. Right. And what about men? What about the interpretation
no
about
long
passing?
Hair.
No long hair, right? So for men it's about hair and for women it's about coverings?
Yeah.
All right. So
the two women were the first ones here in this room.
Oh, yeah?
Two women.
Yeah.
So the Southern Baptist had some...
Yeah. Well, they were okay with women ministering to non-white men, I guess it seems like. But anyways, we won't go into that. Let's talk about men should have long hair, shouldn't have long hair, women should cover the hair. One, I remember I was a high school student, one of my high school teachers tried to, you know, interpret it, and she said, well, you know, in the Middle East, hair was considered attractive, so they didn't want to make men stumble, so covering the hair. But that is a Middle Eastern Arabic interpretation rather than a Greek Greco-Roman tradition, and we'll look at some of the social conventions of their culture instead, and we'll see how that holds up. And also other traditional interpretations I've heard is that a covering is meant as a symbol that she's under authority. So now the interpretation of this passage is, so there are a couple of camps on this. You know, what's called complementarian or hierarchical a camp, and there's also an egalitarian camp. I'm just going to come out straight out. People who know me know that I am an egalitarian. So I'm going to present an egalitarian interpretation of this passage. And but in any case, historically, interpretation of this passage, 1 Corinthians 11, about the head coverings, is traditionally very hard to do. The logic doesn't seem to flow logically. Paul talks about, you know, honoring one's head by uncovering or covering. Like, it's not consistent when it comes to, you know, so because you got to honor your head, you need to uncover it. And because you have to honor your head, you have to cover it. Like, it doesn't make sense. And also, there's the logic of verse 10 with the sign of authority. Why would he talk about authority if it meant submission, if the complete opposite? So what in the world is he talking about? And what in the world are the angels doing in verse 10? So... Now, scholars who have looked at the Greek and know what they're doing, even scholars are completely mixed up as well. In verse 10, when they do recognize that it has nothing to do with the symbol of authority, but she should exercise authority on her head, what in the world does that mean? The argument of the passage seems to suggest, you would expect, you know, he goes, because of this, because of this, because of this, therefore a woman should, then you expect a woman should have a covering. But why does he talk about this authority? This just doesn't make any sense. So why should she? Right. So I'll discuss it. I'm just kind of leading up to the problem, and I have read a very good. Pardon me.
I just want to ask about verse 2 before you get way on into verse 10. Before.
Yeah, this was just an introduction. We'll go verse by verse.
When he says traditions.
Yeah.
Is that significant, do you think? Rather than laws or rules or God's word or
tradition,
or substantive teaching. These are customs that he's handing out.
Yeah, but I don't think that it's referring to this one. Because he gives a commendation in verse 2, like he commends them, but then he goes on to correct some behavior, it sounds like actually the behavior concerning the head covering, he hasn't talked to them about this before. It sounds like he's introducing a new topic that they haven't heard from him yet. So that's why he hasn't rebuked them in this passage. Like later on with the Lord's table, he does rebuke them. So it seems like he's just kind of correcting some behavior that was present in the Corinthian church.
But the question to me is this behavior the kind of thing that's traditional, customary, or is it absolute commands from God. It's a big difference in way of thinking.
Well, you can decide that when I get through.
Okay.
I think that, the short answer is, I don't believe that, I think he's talking about cultural issues here, and he's got some principles, universal principles laid down, but it's not to do with, the roles of men and women. It's to do with respect. And you apply that in different contexts depending on your culture, but you don't apply a rule about head coverings, you apply a principle of respect. So we'll get into that. So I'm going to base my entire thing, because I'm not a scholar in this area, I'm going to base the entire thing on this article that I read that I think is excellent. It's called Wild Hair and Gender Equality in 1 Corinthians 11.
Wild Hair,
and yeah, so, and Philip Payne is the author, and he has turned this article actually into a book called Man and Woman, One in Christ. And it addresses more than 1 Corinthians 11. It addresses quite a few other passages, but it is the best one I've read. I've read quite a few things on gender studies, and this is the best one I've read on 1 Corinthians 11. And I think it really solves all these problems I just brought up. Philip Payne, Payne. Okay, so his claim is that the key to understanding this entire passage is that people who have tried to interpret it have completely disregarded some of the data that we have from ancient Greco-Roman, from the empire back then in Paul's day. And one thing that is abundantly clear is that it was disgraceful for part of the evidence is that for men to have a covering was not considered disgraceful. In fact, it was considered pious in Jewish culture as well as Greco-Roman. To have a toga over the head or something, that was considered pious.
Sort of at all times or in
religious
settings?
Yeah, in religious settings.
Like the high priest in Jerusalem, certain people sure, to cover your head was a very important thing.
Right. So, however, that wasn't disgraceful to have a garment over your head. What was disgraceful was for men to have long, effeminate hair. And why was that? Why was it disgraceful? Because it was associated with homosexuality. So, and then the second point, the second key to understanding the passage,
both
is that
Jewish and Greco-Roman.
Yes. Yeah.
Cultures.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is Hellenistic at that point.
Yeah,
the whole
thing is Hellenistic. Sure. The Jews in that area would have totally
been
totally
Hellenized.
Yeah, they would.
Like in the Dionysius cult, or you will talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, no.
So the second point is that for women, there are plenty of sculptures and paintings of women with hair uncovered, as well as women of nobility that had hair covered. But what was common among all these respectable women was that they had their hair done up, not loose like this, but done up. I mean, I'll show you pictures, but they're really elaborate hairstyles that are really, they're done up. That's the point. So that was a common for all parties concerned, Greeks, Romans, and Jews. Respectable women had their hair up. If you had your hair down, it was because you were in an orgy, or you were part of the Dionysius cult, which also involved orgies and things like that. So those two points have been completely ignored thus far in the discussion of this passage, and I'm going to go through first of all. I went through that. Okay, so
are you saying men in Greco-Roman world have burr haircuts?
Yeah, they had it short. You can see tons of, you know, those statues. Yeah. I didn't get pictures of those. I got the pictures of the women mainly.
All the statues that I remember, every man had much longer hair than anyone in this room.
But yeah. The guys that were in part of the Dionysius cult, for example, which was involved in homosexual activity and other stuff, they would grow their hair real long and curl it and do all kinds of stuff to look very attractive to their other male partners.
Yeah, let me read you some of these quotes. Actually, he says that more than 100 citations about hairstyles on men, about long effeminate hair, are gathered by this one author, and they all say that it's bad. So, for example, in Pseudo-Phocylides, in 30 BC to 40 AD, says long hair is not fit for men. In Philo, a much graver evil has ramped its way into the cities, the disease of effemination. Mark how conspicuously they braid and adorn the hair of their heads. The law ordains that the man-woman who debases the sterling coin of nature should perish. These are grievous vices of unmanliness and effeminacy, licentiousness and effeminacy. The Stoic Musonius Rufus says, hair is a covering by nature and objected to men cutting the hair to appear as women and to be seen as womanish, something that should be avoided at all costs. Plutarch calls a man having his hair curled disgraceful, so curled. I'll skip down to Juvenal's Satire 2, that's in 81:16. He talks about secret torchlight orgies for none but males. One prolongs his eyebrows, another drinks out of an obscenely shaped glass, and ties up his long locks in a gilded net.
Pretty descriptive.
Yeah. of hair, you know, in a feminine kind of hairstyle. And it was associated with homosexuality and orgies because you wanted to look like a woman and make yourself presentable to another man. So that is why he uses the word degrading. Now, if you'll see in verse 4 and in verse 4, he uses the word katastini, disgrace, and in later on in verse 15.
It's also in 14. 5. It's in 4 and 5. But
and asimia, and yeah, in 4 and 5. So basically, he uses the word disgrace, degrading, and he also uses, like at the end of the passage, the word nature, like that that nature teaches you shouldn't be like such and such. And those words are the same words Paul uses to describe homosexuality in Romans 1, 26 and 27. So this is kind of trying to bring up evidence that long effeminate hair was associated with homosexuality, and that's why it was a disgrace. So, what about women's disgraceful head covering or not lack of head covering? Now we know from ancient time, from sculptures and pottery and paintings, that women all the time had hair uncovered, like I said. So I'm going to show some pictures to you. This is actually talking in Crete. Let me grab this. I also got some pictures from the web too. So there we have a woman with hair done up, not covered, but just done up in an elaborate hairstyle. And there's some more too. See, here's another woman.
That's
this is called a Flavian hairstyle. I took this in Crete as well. There's Jordash. Okay. And here's one from the I can't remember.
That's a nice haircut.
50 BCE. Yeah, this one is more. Actually, this one is very similar to the style in the period of Nero as well. So she's got her hair done up. She's got a ribbon in it, but there's no veil, no garment.
Is that short or is that just done up?
It's done up. You see that? There's a little like a. There's you can also see a little bit of a gilded net.
Yeah.
Like
the pictures in the foyer and say respectable women have their hair like this.
I like this. So
no kippahs.
Here's the royal family. Now nobility like noble women and men had coverings on their hair. If you had a covering, it meant you're noble. And she actually doesn't even have one, which is weird. She's got hair.
Or something, didn't she?
She might have a little bit of a crown here. I don't know. And here's this one's a very there's a famous one. This is found in Pompeii, so that's in before 59 or 79. It's probably since her hair is similar to the Nero period, then it's probably going to be 25 years before 79. So 50 or so.
I thought homosexuality though was pretty accepted and common in Greco-Roman culture.
You could have a little boy with you. You could play around with a little boy as long as you didn't have a mustache yet.
So it was more.
Yeah.
But for grown men to do that together is not. You could do it in these secret cults.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Keep it secret. I don't even know if having a little boy was that acceptable by the time we're in the empire, but it did happen. Uh-huh. It did happen. People write about it.
Yeah.
So here's another one.
Even made jokes about it, like, this idiot has a...
Yeah, well, Plato used to say, like, openly argue that it was better to be homosexual, that to have a male partner than to have a female. But anyways,
That's a nice
here's
picture.
Another one. This is a very nice one. This is 110...
Plato said better to...
It was either Plato or Socrates.
Okay.
They're related.
Plato, like the symposium?
Right. Yeah, he argues that it's better to sleep with a man than to sleep with a woman. So, it's pretty... And there's also evidence, pictures, I didn't look at those because they're pretty graphic, but there are pictures of men in homosexual acts who have long hair, so I didn't want to... You know, it's X-rated. So
don't.
Yeah, the core is about long hair. It's about wearing a cap if you're praying and prophesying. So that, is that where we get the whole tradition of not wearing headgear in church?
Well, the thing is, and I'm going to argue. Okay, so I will argue right now because that people want to interpret it as a covering because he uses the word cover. Women shouldn't pray or prophesy with their head uncovered. And then in verse 4, he literally says, a man shouldn't pray or prophesy having down from the head. That's the literal.
Having
down from the head. Let's see, verse
4. Kata
kephales echon. Having down from the head. Kata. That's the literal meaning. It could also mean...
Having his hat... being down off the head or having his hair down the head?
Exactly. It suggests hair. It's not clear.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be clear to the Corinthians, but it was... the author is trying to argue that he's using euphemisms because he's describing very disgraceful things. So he's using a euphemism, having down from the head, you know, as and he uses the word disgraceful. So the Corinthians would have... Yeah, he's long effeminate hair because it's associated with homosexuality. Not necessarily because long hair in itself is bad on a man, right? Because it's an association with homosexuality. So.
Good thing Gary's not here.
Or Randall or Jason.
The point is, if you're going to associate yourself with homosexuality, that's not good. It's not about whether or not what your hairstyle is.
I was kidding.
Okay. So let's go through the thing verse by verse. I might have to skip over something just because I came so late and now it's getting... All right, so verse 2 is the commendation, indicates that Paul had not previously instructed Corinth about hair.
Right, because he says, you are doing everything that I handed on to you.
Right, and in previous parts of Corinthians, he often interacts with previous letters, either written by him or given by the Corinthian church. So here it looks like he hasn't previously given these instructions.
Has not. Okay.
Has not.
Yeah. So verse 3. I'm going to actually use this translation.
Because he goes, I want you to know, what sounds like they don't know that already. Yeah. I want you to know that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and man is the head of woman, and God is the head of Christ. So, this puts the instructions on head coverings in the context of relationship. Now, I always take this for granted, but I know a lot of you probably haven't heard this, but in Greek language, the word head doesn't mean the same thing as it does in English. And or in Hebrew, and it can sometimes mean authority, like a leader, like the head of a something, but that is very, very rare. And the much more common meaning of head is origin or source. And there now, this guy lists 14 reasons why it should be translated source and not a leader or authority. I'm going to just read a couple of them. One of them is the Septuagint. Now, the Septuagint is a Greek translation of the Tanakh, of the Old Testament. And it's an ancient Greek translation about the 2nd century BC, BCE. And now, when these Greek scholars, these Jewish scholars who knew Greek, translated the Torah and the entire Tanakh into Greek, every time they had the Hebrew word rosh, when it means a physical head, they use the word kephale. They use a normal word for in Greek that means head, physical head. But whenever the word in Hebrew was welsh, meaning like head of a tribe or head of, you know, some leader type position, the Septuagint did not use the word head. They used a different word. They used alhon or a number of other words, and which shows that they were uncomfortable with using the word kephale, the word head, to mean authority or a leader over a tribe or over a group of people. So I didn't do the chi-squared analysis on it like I wanted to because I didn't have time. But that is a very significant number, something like a few hundred times they use the word kephale when it means physical head, and it was like six times out of a few hundred times they use kephale instead of...
use something else instead of the word for head in Greek for the word of ocean Hebrew.
Or yeah, they or so basically like 90. I didn't do the calculation. 90-something percent of the time, they used another word for head for when it meant leader. So that is an indication that it was not a common usage to have it as a leader. Now, why would it mean source? Well, it's very similar to what to in English we have the term headwaters. The Greeks had that concept where everything flows from the head. It gives life and nourishment to the body. And it actually makes sense of a lot of the passages in a lot of the instances in when Paul says Christ is the head of the church from whom all, you know, he gets sustenance and life-giving, you know, stuff like that. So,
source.
Kephale in Greek?
The word you were just talking about.
Yeah. The word head in Greek as a metaphor very frequently means source. So there were a lot of quotes on a lot of citations from ancient Greek literature on it, but I'm not going to go through it. I'm just going to go through the reasons for. I'm going to try to go through more of the reasons for why this is going to mean source. Now the list in verse 3, when it says Christ is the head of every man, the man is the head of woman. How does it go? And then God is head of Christ.
The head of every man is Christ. The head of the woman is man. And the head of Christ is God.
Yeah, head of... it's no, without an article. But anyways, it's that suggests more of a chronological order rather than as an order of hierarchy. Because if you wanted to order it, if it meant something to do with hierarchy, then you would list it as God, Christ, man, woman. But instead, it has a completely different order, which actually fits more with chronology. You know... he's claiming that Christ was the agent of creation of man. Then out of man, God took the woman. Then out of a particular woman, God created Christ. Not created, but, you know, you know what I mean. So, begot, whatever, yeah. So the order, that's the second reason. There are plenty of reasons. Verses 7 and 9 explicitly address respect in the context of source relationships. It, you know, it says right there that man was taken out of... woman was taken out of man. So it has... it explicitly talks about source relationships. Nothing... that's in 7 to 9. Mm-hmm. Nothing in the entire passage refers to a man's authority over a woman. Only a woman's authority that she has over her own head. So there's nothing to do with authority in the passage. Nothing. Verses 11 and 12... where he evens things out by saying, but then just as women came from man, now men come from women, and that evens it out. He's the first person to argue this, by the way, that we know of in history, and so that repudiates all notion of hierarchy of man over woman. There's no evidence that the head covering represents subordination anywhere in the ancient Greco-Roman world. And actually, coverings actually represent high social class. They don't represent anything to do with subordination. And the idea of source explains all three relationships, God, Christ, man, woman, Christ, man, consistently. Whereas if you had the idea of authority, then you'd have to postulate that God's Father has authority over Christ, which is problematic with Trinitarian orthodoxy. So, but I won't get into that. So there were a bunch of reasons why it's probably source or origin rather than authority. Okay, so verse 4. verse 4. Every man who prays or prophesies, literally, having down from the head, just raises his head. So having down from the head it kind of suggests hair rather than a garment. And people, you know, want to interpret it as a covering because of a later verse. I argued, for people who just came in, I argued that long effeminate hair was associated with homosexuality, and that's why it was considered disgraceful. That's why he uses very strong words to describe describe this situation in this passage concerning the men.
We're not talking about the 21st century, we're talking about first century.
You talk.
That's why I'm saying long effeminate hair. You could have long manly hair, and that would be different, right? So and that's what he especially, yeah. Okay.
You just said the same thing.
Right, exactly. So people think of, it's not shameful, as I said before, it's not shameful for Greeks, Romans, or Jews for having a garment on the head when you're in a religious context. And how also in the Dionysiac cult, men had long hair to symbolize homosexuality and to present themselves as women. That's written in Plutarch. And why does Paul use this expression? Because he wants, because it's a euphemism. It's because it's very shameful, but the Corinthians would have understood.
Well, anyway, you see, if you saw the Patriot movie, they're all running around with ponytails, all these rebels, swamp fox type rebels. But I don't understand the 16th, 17th century French. They were crazy.
With their poofy hairstyles.
The men were with long, curly
rolly locks.
Every culture has its own standards, I guess.
Yeah.
And they were long hair and rode horses were called hipples, which would be a hippie.
There we go. But you grab it behind, you get it out of your way so you can go run through the bushes and the swamps during the Revolutionary War, and it was a very practical.
And then they just cut it off.
Right.
That works too. One or the other.
So in verse 5, note that Paul assumes that women are praying and prophesying in public, in a public church setting. So it's public, otherwise it wouldn't be disgraceful, right? And notice that in the entire verse, there's no veil or garment mentioned at all. If you have a translation that says veil, it's wrong. So throw that Bible out, or at least give it away to someone and get yourself a read one. So veil is not mentioned at all. So there's as I said before, there is no social convention that required a garment for women, and it's usually meant for the noble classes. There's no social convention in that time that required a garment for women in the Greco-Roman culture.
A head garment. They required garments.
Oh, yeah, a head garment, yeah.
Just clarifying.
That's beaches.
Yeah. And, however, it was very disgraceful, universally disgraceful for women to let their hair down in public. So... So there are a bunch of reasons why hair is a better interpretation than garment for a covering. Long hair in verse 15 is already equated as a covering. It says that God gave, hair was given to a woman as a covering. Mm-hmm. Whoever's translation says in addition to a covering is wrong. It should be either instead of or as a covering. So.
What verse is that?
15.
I'll skip some. So yeah, and I've already mentioned quite a few of them. The hair let down interpretation is consistent for the explanations for the instructions to both men and women. The hair let down, because if a man had his hair let down. Long hair and effeminate, then that's bad. And also, if a woman has her hair let down, that's bad. So, So loosed hair explains more naturally the references to hair in verses 5 and 6, because in 5 and 6 he talks about a woman being shorn, because it's talking about hair. So it just explains more naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It explains verse 13 when it says, judge for yourselves, because we know from that time period that basically when he's saying judge for yourselves, he knows that they would agree with him, that they're, because they have that sense that right. It's disgraceful for a woman to have her hair let down, or for a man to have effeminate hair. So,
or to be shaved.
Right. And another reason is that it doesn't make sense for Paul to demand women to follow a Jewish head covering custom, but prohibit men from following a Jewish head covering custom. Because in Jewish custom, at least in later period, men started, you know, having a tallit. That might have started a lot earlier though than the Mishnah. But they had a prayer shawl, and women cover their hair as well. So it wouldn't make sense for Paul on the one hand to prohibit women from to want women to follow a Jewish custom and make men not follow a Jewish custom. It's just not consistent.
Is there a possibility of celebrating the differences between the two?
Right.
Without flaunting or without demeaning either.
Yeah.
But it seems like some feminist boys want to seem to blur everything, even
right.
in fashion,
right. yeah.
unisex, or to say there's no difference.
Right, yeah.
If you want a woman to carry a 100-pound pack of sack of potatoes, to prove that she's equal. But
right.
To me, that doesn't mean equality.
Right, I don't think Paul was arguing that. I do think that
the subject of this piece is really what?
Is about propriety in terms of sexual, in terms of sexual propriety, honoring marriage, not homosexuality, and not loose sexuality for women, you know, but basically respecting the other sex and respecting marriage, you know. So I think that was the point, and he does, and in order to do that, you have to recognize that, you know, that men and women should be together and not man and a man, right? So if you have a man and a man, then you're blurring the distinction between the sexes, as you were saying, Chuck. And so I think he does try to emphasize that you should preserve distinctions, but through, you know, different means, through being against something else, against.
Does this make Paul a cultural relativist, that sort of he recognizes cultural norms and he's sort of saying we need to go by these rules because that's how everyone else sees it. I mean, like if Paul was to come today in Western society or here in modern day Israel, he would see that for a woman or a man to have her hair down would not suggest looseness or homosexuality or whatever, and then he might come to a different conclusion, you think?
Right, exactly.
So does that make...
That's exactly what I think, and it just makes a lot of sense because he's not a relativist in the sense that he probably would consider homosexuality wrong all the time.
Right.
Why?
Right.
I don't know, but I don't know. I haven't asked him, but he probably would consider, given what he has said in other books, and given his Jewish context. But in terms of the hair, so he would apply, and also he would consider having being sexually loose, like women sleeping around with a whole bunch of men, or you know, or the other way around. He would probably consider that always wrong too. But how it's applied in different cultures will be different. So he's relativist in terms of how you carry it out, but I wouldn't say he's a moral relativist.
The physical representation of
yeah.
that type of
thing. There's no right and wrong, and that's not necessarily what it... Yeah.
Yes.
Since the time will go shortly, everything you've said makes good sense, and I like it. I would like to hear what you do with verse... What do you think verse 16 and then going backwards to 10.
Okay.
And then backwards to 4 and 5.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I will, maybe because the time is short, maybe I'll just draw it on a board, because, and we won't go it through verse by verse, but give an overview instead. I'm very sorry that this is not very good. Okay, so this is how Payne structures it, and I've tweaked it slightly to make it more sense of it, because I think it makes more sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got verse 2. These are all verses. We've got this commendation. It indicates new instruction. And then we've got verse 3. This is a discussion of sources to set up a discussion of source relationships and why you should be respecting the other person. This is relationships and... So it sets up the reasons for respect. Now, so in verse 4, we have instructions to the man. Or, well, let's call it moral obligation. Moral obligation for the man.
Based on shame.
Based on shame, yes. Shame and honor in marriage.
And it also mentions having a head covered.
No, it says kata kefale. That's actually quite vague. Right? So I'm trying to... I tried to explain that it was a euphemism for having down on the head, you know, a euphemism for effeminate hair, because it's a disgraceful thing, so Paul didn't want to say it directly out. So 5 and 6... this is moral obligations to women, and based on shame. 7. This is theological justification for instructions to men. And then 8 and 9. This is theological justification for instruction to women. And this is a sub-point in verse 10. So women need to honor source. His solution, if it's talking about hair, to have authority over your head, it fits very nicely with keeping your hair under control, not having it wild and loose. So it's like that to me is way better than any other explanation I've heard for verse 10, the authority on the head. The angels, we talk about.
You love
hairspray.
Tone it down. By keeping.
Bring back the 80s televangelist wife hairstyle.
There's nothing more color.
If we can parachute, this still stays the same shape.
And then verses 11 and 12, he affirms that even though, you know, you want to affirm men and women's differences by having your different hairstyle, and to affirm, you know, heterosexual marriage rather than he wants to argue in 11 and 12 that despite those differences, in reality, in the Lord, there are no differences in privilege or status. So, no difference between sexes in privilege or class in the Lord. It's parallel to Galatians 3:23. Where it says there is no male or male and female in Christ. So I guess I'm presenting the overview, I'm not arguing it in detail. Mm-hmm. But I think if you look at it carefully, I think it will make a lot of sense. And then 13, judge for yourselves. Judge for yourselves. So, women with hair down, be proper. He does it with a rhetorical question. And 14, men, long feminine hair. Is dishonoring because in 15 long hair is a woman in her glory. Long hair is a woman in her glory. And in 16, the no such custom, he wants to interpret it as the custom of having long hair in worship. So both men and women, hair down for women and long hair for men. They might have been importing what they're used to in the Dionysiac cult into the church. But he's saying, no, we don't have such a custom in any of the churches of God. So that's the explanation for this verse. So that is the overview. Do you want a clarification of any of these points?
I've got a piece of info that you'll like, I think, but I don't know if I share this. I don't have it with me, but I believe that in verse 4, when they translate into Suryoyo, they use the word adorned rather than whatever's here.
Okay, so like with braids or with...
Having his head covered means having his head adorned, like braided or gussied up.
Yeah.
And the Syriac translation actually understood the Greek.
Right.
And it's in there. I don't remember where, whether it's verse 4 or someplace, but if you read the Suryoyo, it's clear that they actually did understand this long hair as being...
Effeminate
hair.
Right, yeah. So that was the very brief summary. We can go into, if any of you want to stick around, we can discuss it in more detail, or you can just read the article yourself or get the book. But what's the application for today? Basically, the summary is, his summary is pretty good too, so I'm going to actually quote from it. So the structural logic of this passage makes perfect sense and all its vocabulary can be understood within its normal range of meaning once the head coverings are understood as wild hair, as explained in verses 14 and 15. Men's effeminate hair symbolized homosexuality and women's hair let down loose symbolized sexual freedom. Consequently, Paul prohibited those leading in worship from either practice. Men ought to respect both Christ, their source in creation, and women, their source in birth, by not displaying effeminate hair. Women ought to exercise control over their heads by wearing their hair up in public worship to symbolize fidelity in marriage and respect to man, their source in creation. The climax of the passage affirms that in Christ, women and men are not separate. He also argues that men and women as sources of each other are just instrumental sources. The ultimate source is God, as he says in verse 12. And... Okay, so consequently, both men and women may pray and prophesy in church. Wait, so this implies equal standing and privilege. Consequently, both men and women may pray and prophesy in church, but should do so in a way that does not undermine marriage. How should believers apply this passage today?
Good question.
The reason Paul objects to men in church leadership wearing effeminate hairstyles is its association with homosexuality and its repudiation of biblical distinction between man and woman. Manly long hairstyles today do not carry that association and message. So this passage should not be used to object to manly long hair today. So
the question of what's manly and what's...
Well, that's determined by culture.
And the whole thing is based on the presupposition that homosexuality is a sin.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I think it's biblically nonsense.
Yeah. If you look at Lord of the Rings, all the men in there are long hair.
What?
Lord of the Rings in the movie, they all had long hair, and that wasn't... considered homosexual at all, or gay, or anything. It was considered, they were heroes in the movie. But anyway, So that tells you that in our culture, long hair is not associated with homosexuality necessarily. I mean, not at all, actually. Similarly, the majority of women today wear their hair down, like I do, and this practice is not associated with repudiation of sexual fidelity in marriage. So it would be a misuse of this passage to object to women wearing their hair down today. This passage could be properly applied today, however, against leaders in worship adopting any custom that symbolizes homosexuality or that undermines fidelity in marriage by being sexually suggestive. The message is, don't use your freedom in Christ as an excuse to dress immodestly. In demeanor and word, keep it clean. Furthermore, men and women should show respect to each other, honoring the opposite sex as their source. Right. So men and women can lead in worship and all that.
Keep it clean.
Very nice.
Well, even the Lord made an exception. Jesus accepted Mary Magdalene when she put her hair down. Jesus didn't
know. Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Mary Magdalene, by the way, but it was
one of the Marys.
It was a professional woman.
Does it say that?
It just says, a sinner in Luke 7.
In Luke, it was a sinner. And then for Mary, the sister of Martha, that was a separate incident, or might be a separate incident. Definitely a separate pericope.
That's an interesting point. He didn't turn someone away who let down her hair to wash his feet. That's pretty interesting. That would be pretty scandalous, actually, now that I never thought about that before. That gesture of letting down her hair.
To touch them with her. And touch them with her hair.
In front of all these people.
The first ones were jumping out of their seats. They didn't even have seats.
So maybe Paul, or maybe even Jesus, wouldn't let her lead worship in that way, but I certainly wouldn't refuse someone coming to meet Jesus like that and interact with him. Which is another important application, that we wouldn't turn anyone away from a worship service just because they looked. We might not want them to grab the guitar and lead worship or something, but we wouldn't want to kick them out.
Right, yeah, because it's to do with praying and prophesying, which suggests leadership.
I'm sorry.
And just in the study, this passage creates a bigger issue of how we take any commands of the Bible and apply them to our time.
Right.
We have to interpret them, because Leviticus from passages about that man not sleeping with another man, we say, oh, okay, homosexuality is out. But one of those passages says quite clearly that homosexuals should be executed.
Right.
We don't follow that one.
No, we don't.
In most places, at least in America, I don't know, the rest of the world, but so we make judgments about we make judgments based on our culture and our understanding and the rest of the Bible. It's probably not a good idea to go chasing around finding homosexuals to kill them.
No, not at all.
But it's clear in the Bible, it teaches that.
Yeah, and I think
if
also...
If you just quote that one verse and say, I believe the Bible literally, that's what I've got to do.
Yeah.
That's what you do, which is crazy.
Yeah,
it is crazy. And look at today, nobody...
Oh, you can make a very good argument for slavery from Old and New Testament.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But other things have helped us to decide it's probably not a good idea. That's why I say I think we need a fresh look at those few passages that have reference to homosexuality and understand them in a broader context of the Bible and our culture.
And so why is the translation of these IV with supposedly, many, many minds and very good scholarship, we come up with such a poor translation and a misleading translation?
Well, I think that some people, they think they know what he's trying to say, and so they make it say that what he, I think they're doing it, they're not trying to mislead people, but they really believe that Paul is saying this thing, which he's not, and so they translate in such a way to make it sound like that.
It would be unclear for us if they just translate literally. So that, we've got to make sense of this for our English readers. Let's give it our best interpretation.
Right.
That's what happened in scores of cases.
Yeah.
So we get stuck with their interpretation rather than knowing what the more vague words really were.
Yeah, and also I think it's important, a lot of people who translate may or may not be familiar with culture. They might be familiar with language really well, and maybe some aspects of culture, but they may not have researched all the pottery, all the sculptures, and applied that to this passage. So he's really the first one that I know of who's applied. He's not the first one. He refers to other people who does it, but he's the first one to put it all together into a nice logical flow. Other people have suggested that it means hair.
This is a good study for knowing that every translator translates from their own framework of culture.
Yes.
And you got to watch out because it really throws the text way off.
Yeah, that's why you all need to learn Greek. And it's not that hard. And Randall Booth has this, you know, and Margaret Hartwick has this program that, you know, teaches Greek as a living language where you jump and walk and talk in Greek.
And Gary and
helps. So, Biblical Language Center, you should look up. Sign up for Biblical Language Center.